remember, our last meeting ended at 25 minutes after 7. We've got a lot of work to do to beat that. We've had another request because of the number of people here from Kingsclear that we move that discussion as well. Did you check with?
I was speaking to Sean and Daniel.
The issue is that we have a presentation by two of our staff people on the Oromocto High School specification and the Fredericton Northside presentation, and they were promised that they could go early, so they Sean has to travel back to farther than Woodstock. And so we're just checking with them to see if they can stay later, and if they can, then I'll ask for a motion to, yes.
Just point of information, I guess just in relation to that, I'm anticipating a very short discussion, and I would certainly
be in favor.
Make the motion to move it there.
Okay, well, why don't you do that? Because we'll probably be done before they get back to
right.
us.
Right. I move that the Kingsclear Consolidated School discussion move right after the previous LGBTQ+ discussion.
Okay, do we have a seconder? Wallace?
Question.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary minded? Give motion passed. So, Kingsclear Consolidated School, not quite a year ago, we had a motion to table the decision on our sustainability study, and I think you're all aware of the three options that we had for the sustainability study. Prior to that, we had passed motions that Kingsclear Consolidated, am I saying that right?
We should call us KCS for short.
That the school would not be closed in 2017 or in 2018, but we are still facing, having finished a sustainability study, what will we do with those three options that we had in the study? So I understand that I have a motion, yes?
I just have a point of information by way of proper procedure not related to this discussion. It's just in relation, I don't know who else here is staff members. But certainly in our last discussion, Gail Costello, who is a staff, spoke out, and we understand parents don't understand how it works. And I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if there is any other staff that does speak out, if the person sitting in for our superintendent could deal with it, because it is out of order and inappropriate.
Sure.
Okay? All right. So with that, I would like to make a motion to take off the table the discussion and report around the Kingsclear Consolidated School.
And seconder, Sean?
Madam Chair, may I speak?
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion to table this discussion and report.
And do you have a time?
I do not.
So,
times are debatable, but the motion's not.
We would need a seconder, but before you do that, think seriously, if the motion is tabled and there's no date to come back, then another sustainability study would have to be done. The motion would be lost. The decision would be lost.
Potentially, correct.
Potentially. So do I have a seconder?
I'll second.
And so we call for the vote. All in favor? No, tabling.
Oh, table.
You can ask for a clarification, but you can't debate it.
So clarification, if this motion, if this decision is tabled without a date, as the motion has been made, then if the decision of the DEF was to look at the future of the Kingsclear Consolidated School, we would have to do another sustainability study.
Just a question of order. Are we allowed to ask that the motion be reworded to include a date?
You'd have to defeat it at this point.
Yeah.
Think carefully how you vote.
Yeah.
So, any other questions on clarity? Clarification? No? All in favor of tabling the decision on the King's Clear's Consolidated School Sustainability Study, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary-minded, nay?
Nay.
I need a show of hands. All in favor of the motion, raise your right hand, please. And contrary-minded, raise your right hand, please. Right, the motion has been defeated. Jane.
I would make a motion that we table the discussion and motion around King's Clear Consolidated School, bringing it back to the table in September of 2018.
Seconder?
That's second.
Could you? Yeah, Heather and Faye.
September 2018.
Clarity?
Could I just change that to October? Yeah. October 2018. I forgot about the election month. Yeah. So October.
Are you okay
with that? I would second
that,
change, yes.
Any other questions?
No questions.
No questions. All in favor signify with aye, please.
Aye.
Contrary-minded, nay?
Aye.
I believe the motion is carried. Yeah, I don't think we need hands.
No.
Are you asking for a show of hands? Okay. So, for clarity, we've tabled it once more. Do you want to speak?
Well, I was going to. I'm a little lost about what happened, but can I read my letter of support, or is there...
There's no need.
There's no need.
Okay.
There isn't any decision.
Okay, so
to be
I
made.
Will. I can read this.
In October.
Okay,
yeah.
Save it for October.
It's an impossible decision for us to make given the current circumstances. We can't decide to to ask to have the school closed, to ask to have improvements done, because we don't know what's happening in the city of Fredericton on the south side is bulging.
Are we discussing it?
No.
Okay.
I'm running off at the seams.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm allowed to after the last hour. So, is everybody, I know, are you asking what that means?
They don't understand.
Yeah, we don't understand.
We will have to revisit this again in October.
It's just table on top. Okay, so that's all. Same as last year.
Gives you more time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All
right.
Nice banner, though.
And
shirt.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Okay, nice to meet you. We got some more air.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'm going to make a motion that we move the rest of the reports from new business to now.
Seconder.
That would just allow Sean and Daniel to do their thing and move on.
Seconded by Sean.
Yeah.
All in favor, say
aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Contrary to name. Thank you. You are on.
Yes.
Yes. That's what I thought we were going to do. originally do, but I thought there'd be a discussion.
Yeah, yeah, just give them, more time.
Okay, so the first presentation that I'm doing tonight is on the Armucto High School education specifications. So a requirement from government is for when a new project is set to be approved, and once it's approved, once the design is developed, the next step is for the DEC to approve the ed spec before it actually goes out and goes to the architect and eventually is tendered. So it's kind of that in the flow of the this is where we are in the steps, I guess. So the scope of the project at OHS, in the fall of 2018, Cabinet approved the midlife project at OHS. We conducted a study there, and we incorporated the consultant's report into the overall ed spec. So they identified a number of things, along with things that we identified at the school that should be part of the midlife refit for the school. So that was all put into the ed spec. So midlife projects are to ensure the school meets the facility and educational requirements for students for the next 30 years. So that's kind of the governing concept of a midlife project. It's to make the building viable for 30 more years. So the anticipated project completion date for this is September 2023. So you can see we're about 5 years out from the complete project. It's a large project that's going to happen there. So I'll take you through some of the highlights, but I'm not going to go into every little detail because it would take way too long. So basically, I've just put a list of things, and I believe that you had access to my presentation before this, so you had an idea of what's on here, so I'll try not to read everything that's on here to you. But basically, it looks at all the life safety, fire integrity requirements to bring the building to the 2010 building code standards. So a number of other things that you've seen with other midlifes that we've done here at FHS, roofing work. They have a greenhouse that's part of the school there. It's going to be completely refreshed as part of this. Of course, classroom upgrades and work around the property, as well as we'll do a number of upgrades to the mechanical heating ventilation. The kitchen will be upgraded, and any new equipment that needs to be sourced will be part of the project as well. Probably one of the biggest changes to the footprint of OHS is an additional gymnasium over and above what they have now. So there will be a second gym as part of this, which will provide more opportunities for students and in turn will provide more opportunities for after-hours use as well and for larger tournaments and things that can be housed at OHS. So it's a really nice addition. Our obligations for bringing the building up to accessibility as well, those upgrades. Incorporating ISD is one of the new changes. So the ISD or Mukto based team will have their offices at OHS. So part of this midlife, they will construct offices. And through that, they're actually taking over the area where administration is now. And administration is moving to what they call the front of the building, which today would be the back of the building, but it's really the front of the building, if you're following me. So that's where they're going to move as part of this construction. And this is the last slide. Number of washroom upgrades, resource rooms, security and safety, and all classrooms and labs will receive some form of upgrade, depends on the classroom. I have a detailed listing by classroom that details everything that's going to be done in the building. I'm not sharing that with you here tonight. At some point, though, I will make the document available for you to see, so you can get it for those that would like to see it. There's a certain part of the document, though, that contains the monetary part, which, of course, I'm not able to show, but But overall, it's looking at about between $25 and $30 million project in that range. So, big project for OHS. So that's the ed spec and what education requires of the council is a motion to approve the ed spec for OHS. So that is the ask from me tonight.
I motion that we approve the ed spec for OHS.
We have a motion and a mover and a seconder. I have a question. Do you have a question, Mark? Or are you seconding?
No, second.
Okay. So we have a motion to approve that. I just wanted to ask, does this include anything for the Ed Center?
Exterior-wise, yes, but interior upgrades, no.
Only because it's a part of the building.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So and the heating issue, like, it's really warm in that. If you've ever been in that office,
yes.
It's like super heated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're actually in this upgrade. They're actually looking at repurposing that extra heat that's down there and recirculating it through the building. So it won't be as hot, I hope. It's in the design, so that's good for people that work there because it is hot there. Yeah, you go to the washroom there, it's like going to the spa.
Too much information. I think that's important, though, because sometimes there is a confusion between what's done
yes.
for district office and what's
yeah.
done for
yeah.
schools.
Yeah, no, the offices there are in very good condition. And we have our own maintenance routine for those spaces.
Mark, did you have a question?
Where's the gym going to be?
The gym is actually going, it'll be right in front of the current entrance to the school.
The main
where
entrance?
The main entrance
yeah.
today.
Yeah.
That new gymnasium is going to go just to the side of that, where right next to the existing gym.
In that
gym,
corner.
In that corner, right there.
And where will the main entrance be?
It'll be on the other side.
Where district is, or where the buses are?
Where the buses are. So there'll be a whole new drop-off area and stuff designed for buses and parent traffic as part of this.
On the other side?
It'll utilize, some will be on, like, where the students park now, because the buses
right.
will be coming in around there and dropping, because that'll be the main entrance
yeah.
for students getting off. But the parent drop-off will be the current out front. But it'll be out back. That's where parents will drop students when they're dropping them there now. So
where the buses are. No, where the office
is. Where the office is
yeah.
now. Yeah.
That'll be the new parent drop-off.
Yes.
Are they taking that access off Wasis Road?
No.
Okay.
No, they'll have to maintain, they'll have to change a little bit
okay.
there just because of the
encroaching on the building.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's kind of the footprint. And once I actually have... once it goes to the design, we get some mock-ups and stuff of what it's going to look like, then I can share that with council, no problem. You can see that.
James?
I'm just wondering, Sean, historically out in that area, when we start tearing schools apart and stuff, we find things that cause bigger problems. Have we already checked that out with OHS? Like, is there any black mold under that brick? Or?
So as far as the consultant that DTI hires to do this, examination. They do a number of tests. They look at the asbestos reports and they incorporate that all into the actual report of work that needs to be done. So they know where things are. You know, could there be something discovered? You know, there's always that possibility, right? Because they only test in a few key areas, right? So they have a process for dealing with it, though.
Further questions?
I just wouldn't want OHS upgrade to take any money away from a potential Leo Hayes expansion.
Where's that? What is that?
Number one on our list.
For now.
Now this has been approved by cabinet, so it's not doesn't have to fall in with our major capital request.
This is done, basically.
Is done.
It's well, if you guys approve the ed spec tonight.
Right. The school. When the motion is on the table. Call for
questions.
All in favor signify with aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded nay. Motion is carried. Go.
All
right. You guys carpool?
Most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time we do. Not tonight though. He's staying down, I'm going home.
You want to stay on the trip early in the morning.
Where's that? Go somewhere.
Or Mark, that's okay. You make our motion. That's your school.
So tell all the Anglophones to stop complaining about the new French guys.
Yeah, we're getting more money. 35 million.
That was good. Let's move on.
All the news media left, they won't know about it.
The OHS, yeah. Well, they're out there interviewing these things. Or the rally district staff.
Structure and enrollment data of elementary schools on the north side of Fredericton. The Director of Finance Administration, along with his team, have compiled the following facts and have included recommendations to the deck. A little background, there are currently six elementary schools on the north side of Fredericton that we considered in this study. Marcus Point Elementary School, Gibson Neal Memorial Elementary School, McAdam Avenue Elementary School, Nashwauk Sisk Memorial School, Park Street Elementary School, and Royal Road Elementary School. So with the current school structures, they have a combined functional capacity of 83%, current enrollment of 21-29. Schools are considered full when they reach the 80% mark, so in this case it would have been 2,054 students. The district notes that the north side of Fredericton is projected to continue to grow in the future. Currently, 9 mobile classrooms located at these 6 schools. Enrollment projections, these actually came from the Ernst & Young report that they did for the south side. So we just used the same their projections, I guess, basically. If you want to go through them, by all means, you can. I don't know if really touch on too much, but you can. I guess you can see that no matter what model you pick, is that it's going to continue to grow. Yeah. So, just give you a little history on each one of the schools here, where they're at with enrollment, functional capacity, and operational cost. So, Barker's Point Elementary School, as you can see, their enrollment's basically stayed right around the same. Functional capacity, they're at basically 80% now, and one kid over the could be 2, it could be even now, but it's right around there. Operational cost, if you want me to get into that, I can, I guess, but Sean would be a better one to explain all the lines and why things cost X amount of dollars in one place versus in another school. Gibson Neal Memorial Elementary School. Again, with the enrollment, you can see their enrollment's gone absolutely crazy. They've got 105 kids more in 2015-16 than they did in 2011-2012. And I believe that's even gone up. Mark, you probably know that, but I'm sure it's even gone above the 606. They're currently 116 kids over capacity. So, again, the operational costs, you can look through that. You've got the presentation, too. So, is there any need?
They have specific questions at the end around operations, and I can answer those.
Yep. McAdam Avenue Elementary School, their population has basically, or sorry, their enrollment has declined slightly. It's not huge, but it is on the decline. Currently, they're under capacity, so they've got room for 99 students. Dash Roxas Memorial School. Their enrollment has just gone down and then back up again. You can see it's gone up in the last 3 years. And currently they're over 11 students. And I guess we could mention that with the French immersion and the change in the programs, that that's could be why you've seen the enrollment change, I guess, in the last couple of years. Park Street Elementary School, their numbers have gone down slightly. They're down 31 kids in the last 5 years, but they're still over capacity, or over 5 students. Royal Road Elementary School, they've gone way up and then back down. Now they're on their way back up again. And again, they're over capacity by 40 students. So as you can see, as I was going through there, there's a common theme that almost everyone was over capacity. Recommendations, based on the fact that the current structures are over the combined functional capacity, we feel it is necessary for the addition of 2 new elementary schools on the north side of Frederick. Our proposed locations would balance the student populations amongst existing schools and allow for future growth on the north side of Frederick. So this is kind of just an overview. The red students are the students that we basically drew a boundary up. I guess it would be a draft boundary. We could get the finer details if you wanted a few more students in or out. That would be, I guess, up to the superintendent to do that. But that was basically our first draft, and that was just as far as taking bearing in mind that the 70% mark is really the optimal number for functional capacity at a school. That's what we tried to do, is to get that and leave us 10% for growth.
Daniel, can I interrupt
yeah,
for
sure.
just one moment? This presentation will be a part of the minutes of this meeting, and that will be public. So if you're trying to scribble down all those numbers, then...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So it'll be made available to the public?
Yeah.
No, I just couldn't see the map.
Okay.
Did you get a good look at
it? Daniel, just for those that aren't
yeah.
familiar with that side, is there any landmarks you can point out on the map to give
yeah,
us a
so that
proposal
actually,
of...
That would be St. Mary's First Nation right
yeah.
there. That would give you any indication. And the Ring Road, so actually, McAdam Avenue School, Mark, you might have to help me, but it should be right in the street.
Yeah. That's Jewett Street, so just around the corner, right here, McAdam Avenue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the green
highlighted area? So that's actually the current National Access Memorial boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it. Kind of the south portion.
Because all then the left-hand side of Brookside Drive.
So really, essentially what we've done, we've taken bits and pieces of 3 different boundaries. Like we took part of Gibson Neal Memorial, part of Nashville Access Memorial, and I think that's all of McAdam Avenue.
All of McAdam Avenue, yeah. McAdam Avenue is just that.
So the new elementary school in the McAdam Avenue area, standard elementary schools are designed with a functional capacity of 500 students when at 100% capacity, so 400 students at that 80% mark, which is again where they say schools are full. So this proposed boundary would see approximately 357 students zoned for this school, giving it a functional capacity of 71%, which is really between 1680 to 70% is the optimal number. Depending on location, there's potential for many of these students to continue being walkers, so it doesn't add big long transit times or anything like that for students. Then the new elementary school in the Killarney Lake area, potential school boundary again. So that was really just the northern part of the National Access Memorial boundary. And we did take a big piece of Royal Road, just a little bit, which was, it was drawn kind of funny. Again, probably at numbers at one point, they drew it through the middle of a subdivision where the kids across the street went one way, and you know what I mean? So we just tried to clean that up a little bit and give Royal Road some room. And the standard elementary schools are designed with a function capacity of 500 students, went at 100%, so the 400 students was at 80%. So this proposed boundary would see approximately 363 students zoned for this school, given a functional capacity of 73%. And again, depending on the location, you could have many walkers, like they build it on the back end of a subdivision or something like that. I guess we've seen that in Medexenkeg consolidated in Bedell there. They had built that in the lower end of a subdivision with the hopes that there'd be walkers. So impact on other schools, what's this going to do? So these scenarios would see a recommendation of closing or an addition to the current McAdam Avenue Elementary School and the closure of Nashua Access Memorial School. It would also alleviate a lot of the overcrowding at the six elementary schools. Most of the nine portable classrooms currently in place would be removed. And why it doesn't say all of them is because Barker's Point has one. And we're not doing anything to their boundary, so we're not impacting them at all. So that one would still be there, and I hope, I guess it would be planned that the other eight would be removed, or not used, but it would be removed. So this is just a little chart of what the impact actually will do to school enrollments and functional capacities. So the top one, you can see that everybody's, other than McAdam Avenue, is at the 80% or higher. In Gibson Neal's case, Gibson Neal Memorial Elementary School, they've got how many portables?
Five.
They've got five portables and they're still not 100% full. So the bottom part there, you can see with if we were to do this as we propose, Barker's Point doesn't change, as I just mentioned. Gibson Neal goes down by 22%, so they've got all kinds of room. I shouldn't say all kinds of room, but they're actually almost at the 80% full mark anyway. Park Street, though, you see that goes way down to 57. And why we kind of targeted Park Street is that it's centralized amongst the elementary schools, so if we ever had an overcrowding issue in the future, we can just tweak boundaries a little bit. With that being in a central spot, we can move some more kids into there. Royal Road Elementary School goes down to 78%. The two new ones would be 71 and 73%. So I'll recap again. There is currently 2,129 students. Which is a functional capacity of 83%. The addition of the two proposed new elementary schools would see the 80% functional capacity increase to 2,412 students. And if you were just to use the current enrollment, not factoring in any growth, functional capacity would be at 71%. These proposed school boundaries have all elementary schools at an 80% functional capacity or less, with only one being below the optimal 60 to 80% mark, which was Park Street, as I mentioned, that we could use that. I wouldn't say a safety, but I guess have that in the background. If you ever did get full somewhere, you could pull kids into there. Allows for room at Park Street Elementary School for future boundary changes to a more centralized location on the north side. And this should see most portable classrooms, except Barker's Point, removed. Questions?
Are your proposed enrollment figures including grandfathering, or are you just expecting that they'll cut over and?
Yeah, they weren't including any grandfathering, actually. That would be obviously a decision that you folks would have to make, but no, that was just a straight to plunk them ahead every year.
Mark.
So, Madam Chair, if I'm correct, we would have to do a sustainability study on.
Memorial.
On what?
Two.
Nashwick and McAdam Avenue. Yeah. And when do we need these schools? They say.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're at 83% right now, right? And yeah, basically, every school other than McAdam Avenue is busting up the seams, like, for space. So.
And it can take, as you know, it can take up to 5 years. Time we get decision around this would be, like this will be coming back to the table for you folks in May when we develop our major capital list, and through that a number of projects on there are similar to this, like the Liverpool and Forest Hill School is a similar situation, right, where you have two schools that would be closed that would go into a new school, right? So we've learned from the past a little bit that 409 we'd have to look at those ones as well as part of when we're looking at our major capital. So
we're just talking about, you know, we went through a year where we did six sustainability studies and almost killed ourselves, but you know, Anglophone South is much stronger than we are, and have done many more, and the North tells me they are too. Anyway, we will do what we need to do, and we have a city that's bulging at the seams.
My concern would be, as it relates to Kingsclear, where you do a sustainability study, then you don't get funding. The questions or the clarity that I would like to have in May when we do have to make decisions, you know, probably the one question is the expiry date of data, because certainly that's a discussion that would come up in October when we revisit Kingsclear. You do a sustainability study, how long is that good for? Of course, keep in mind, we don't know the outcome. So for example, if we did a sustainability study on the north side and the outcome was we move to build these and close those when they're built, then that's technically not stale dated. So I understand that scenario, but you know, I just, you know, going back to the department and having some clarity on to make sure when we make a decision in May we have all the information, that would be my concern taken from tonight.
And I think perhaps what we've heard from estimates today that the DEC has to go back and look at what our asks are and work with the department really doesn't tell us much at all. I mean, can we ask for a guarantee that if we say we will do this, then we will get this? No, there aren't any guarantees. Can we ask how high certain asks would rate in the quadruple
bottom line?
We could ask that, and that might help. But yeah, we have some thinking to do, and we have, you know, a possibility of four that need to be done.
One more question.
It just in Fredericton, without going upriver. Yes, Mark.
Just for the quadruple bottom line, and maybe Sean can answer this question, maybe not, but have they factored into the quadruple bottom line, A, who the minister is, and B, that Minister Premier Gallant is now technically serving as the Minister of Education? I don't know if he can answer that or
are
not.
Are you trying to pay somebody back or something? You could ask Sean yourself. I would direct that question to Sean. Can you answer that?
Well, having previously reviewed the quadruple bottom line matrix in a couple of different meetings, there was no component that speaks to your question.
Thank you.
Good answer.
However, they do have a small component now that considers the DEC requests. I'm not sure.
The waiting. We'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. Thank you. So the next question is, what area you want to take on next?
That's up to you guys.
You know, there's a problem when you do a good job on something.
Also good.
So this report doesn't have to be adopted. From what I understand, it's just presented.
We have not adopted the reports from Ernst and Young, so we've just received them.
Well, it's up to you, Madam Chair, but I would certainly suggest that in this case, because staff did so much extra work and created their own report, if you would be willing to entertain a motion of appreciation for all their extra work, I would make that.
I was just going to suggest that.
Okay.
Do we have a second, or do you understand the motion? And you're seconding that? Are we ready to vote on that?
Question.
Question's been called. All in favor of expressing whatever Mark said, but thanks for the great work. All in favor say, signify with aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded, nay.
I was just speaking.
She voted twice. She voted twice.
Yeah.
Would you?
I was just doing what people told me to do.
No. Thank you. It's great to have staff do these reports because you're at our beck and call when we want to have questions answered on them. It's not like trying to call some firm somewhere and say, "How'd you get that number again?"
We're back to the agenda.
Yes. So the only update I have for you in terms of what you have, what you had directed us to take to the ministers' forum, is that the delays in announcing the assessment results, as well as the non-happening of the grade 4 and 10 assessments, were based on unique staffing shortage, and apologies for those, but there wasn't anything to be done about that. So I think the concern was well noted. Yes. Under assessment results, Gina's going to speak to the process because it is a public forum. So,
thank you for letting me sit in for Catherine. It's kind of cool. Good night to be here.
Did you enjoy it?
She owes me.
That's on tape.
Catherine and I talked last week, and she asked me just to give an update on the process for that, taking you through what happens from the time the department receives the assessment back from schools. So one thing I did was I took a look at the assessment timetable, and work really begins in September. Assessment, and it goes throughout the year. Actual assessments, the bulk of them are written in May and June. And so once they're written, then marking sessions occur. And during those marking sessions, open-ended questions are looked at. So groups of teachers are brought in, and they are trained in how to mark specific questions. So if the four of us are in one team, then we mark the same question for the entire marking period. There's something that occurs that's called calibration. So we want to make sure that Kim and I are on the same page with how we're marking. And they also, before they actually begin marking, they use the curricular outcomes to develop a rubric for what are they looking for in the answer. If it's a multiple choice question, then multiple choice questions are a Scantron machine is used to mark those. So those aren't marked by humans. So once all of that occurs, then the work of the department begins, and this would be where if you're down two folks, then it's going to slow the process down immensely. All the data comes in a raw data file. It's put into a software package, and in that package, what happens is that one person has to take all the information and clean it, and make sure. And when they say they clean it, they're looking for any omissions, if kids left out questions, didn't answer them, any anomalies. And then they pull those actual books and they look in them. So they go through the books for anything that might be striking them as it's a bit off. It also takes, when they're cleaning the data, they also look at merging the exemptions and accommodations database, because that has to be considered as well. How many kids have been exempt, and how many were their accommodations made. Once that happens, Then they run a statistical analysis, and from that analysis they run a preliminary report, and from that preliminary report then they begin to, okay, how are we going to share this information? And it can't just come directly to the, doesn't come just directly to the public, it has to go to the minister. Once the minister has seen the results and the directors of curriculum and other directors, then it gets released internally to schools. So schools have their results before the public has their results. The reason being, they need to start working with that information. And once that happens, then continues to work through getting reports ready, and you've had presentations before where graphs are shared. Those are all parts of those reports that come in. And once the reports are finalized and decisions have been made around how we're going to use the information, then it's released publicly. So that's the process. And so when you think about, most of the assessments are written in May and June, a turnaround of them being released in October normally is a good turnaround. It was late this year. It was much later, and as Kim shared, it was because of a lack of personnel for unforeseen circumstances. Okay. Questions? Yes.
Sorry, it's not really for tonight. We talked about having this more of a discussion tonight, but with Catherine being away, we just kind of had a summary discussion. But one question I would like to see addressed at a future session, so usually we email them in, but I always forget, so I'm going to do that. So I'd like to pose it now. Can we get an update coming back? I'd like to see how much we're spending on leads in these areas. So we've been focusing on numeracy leads, literacy leads. So if you look at some, like if I look at grade 6 math, you went from 19% to 39%. So that's a fantastic improvement. So I'm just curious on what we're spending for our costs. And then if you look at grade 2 reading, there was 0.7% improvement. So granted, that was higher to start with, but I'd like to see what we're spending in lead money to see those results so we can see what kind of bang for the buck we're getting.
So you're looking for impact of leads?
Yes.
On assessment results?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we can take a look at that.
Okay.
And just for your information, what Sean was referring to, we had asked the superintendent for information on assessment results in French immersion and individual school results, and we're postponing that until she can be here. So that would have been under superintendent monitoring reports. Curricular program presentation, and that's been postponed, just so that you're aware. I didn't think we needed to make one more change to the agenda. Okay.
Maybe just in addition to what Sean said was maybe the disbursement of leads. You know, how many leads are at, and how the leads are dispersed, I think is good information for this group to have, mm-hmm. You know, grade level wise or area, subject area wise, that type of thing.
And are you interested in how decisions are made on where leads go, or just disbursement where they've been?
I think that would be a good idea. I know how to coach,
yeah.
But I think it's good information for people to know how those decisions are made as to where they go and how long they go for and what they do while they're there and that type of thing.
Sure. We have to be careful that we're not getting into
operations.
Right.
It's more, I'm just taking
more
background
when
Sean's talking about the improvement in assessment results. I mean, that's because when it comes down to lobbying governments for education money, then, you know, it's nice to know what the background is. So I'm not concerned about the operation part.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Oh, sorry, one
yes.
question. Do principals get a bit of a, is there some flexibility in administrators getting to say where the leads go, or is it just this is where they're going to be and that's it?
Leads would be deployed to buildings, and principals and subject coordinators and leads would determine what grade level or specific classroom they'd be working in.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Moving on to correspondence. I believe you have a copy of the letter that I received from Minister Bill Fraser, responding to my request for more sustainable energy projects. So it was interesting that they're thanking me and us for our interest in that, and I'm glad that we wrote that letter. We also had a letter from the PSSC at Lincoln Elementary, and that would fall under the jurisdiction of the district operations, so I've left that with the superintendent to respond to. And I think that's it for correspondence.
No.
And we are into superintendent monitoring reports, am I right?
Yeah.
So you're still on?
Yeah.
Or it's on again?
Just have to find the report.
Now you're on, yes.
I am, I have a lot of papers. So. So this is the monitoring report that's titled Healthy Living, ASDWRER 2.3. It's reported on once a year, so this is our time in February to do so. And it is, Catherine asked that I acknowledge that this is the first time using this form of the monitoring report. You've done some work in restructuring how reports are created and what information is delivered, and the idea behind that is to support the governance model that you operate under. When I review the report, I notice that really it's broken into three sections. The interpretation section, which outlines goes into more detail, I guess, the intent of the policy statement. And it highlights what the policy is trying to achieve, as well as how success will be measured. Within the evidence section, which is, I guess we don't have page numbers, but it's the third page in mine, and the evidence section, that captures our actions and measures of success that are taken at both the school and district level. And then there's a data section which shows the data that is used to support the evidence section. So it does feel to me like it's more concise. So we are interested in feedback, and probably the chair will be looking for that as you move on in this using this model. So some things I'd like to highlight is that if you look in the evidence section, you'll note that the curriculum that is attached to this policy around healthy living is You and Your World, K-2, Personal Wellness, 3-5, Health Education, 6-8, Personal Development and Career Planning, Grades 6-10, Physical Education, K-8, and Health and Physical Education, 9-10. So those are the specific curriculums that are being used in our schools that would support healthy living. You'll also notice that one of our actions is that all service providers must adhere to the expectations within Policy 711, And our measure of success in that area is to ensure that a nutritionist by the name of Shauna Miller reviews all cafeteria menus. And you'll notice there were no complaints received from September 2017 to December 2017, so that's good. As far as how we're promoting healthy living among families and helping families keep up to date on what's happening, they can go on our public website, and there's a section for healthy living, and you'll notice that there's some great newsletters that are shared with schools that are posted there. So there is a mode of communication that can be used for parents to access information around how to support healthy living on our website. Near and dear to my heart is the data. And so with the data, there are specific things that we're looking at, and we're really focusing on promoting student resiliency, and that is linked to mental fitness. So if you were to look at the data section, you would see that the data that we're using is coming from our NB Health Council wellness surveys, and schools are also using their Our School data, which is a survey that occurs every year. I wanted to highlight in the wellness section of data, when we're looking at the levels of mental fitness, what's being measured in that area are students' abilities, but level of competency. And so when we talk about competency, we're talking about their strengths, their gifts and talents, autonomy, how good are they at making choices about things that are important to themselves, and relatedness. Do they feel included, supported, and encouraged by others? So higher levels of mental fitness indicate that students are scoring, feeling good about themselves in those three areas. Moderate, the same, and low would be areas that we need to improve. Higher levels of mental fitness support higher levels of resiliency. And if you notice in the interpretation section of the of the report, there's a definition of resiliency, which it's defined as resiliency is defined by the JCSH as the ability to persist in the face of adversity and to thrive even when encountering challenges. So it's an important skill for our children, for sure, and our adults as well. So that concludes my summary of the report. Any questions? Heather?
Not really. It's more of
a comment.
Just a comment. Statement. Comment.
Go ahead.
Go
ahead.
Thank you. I am really concerned, and there's a smidgen of this that's addressed in this, but I'm really concerned about the mental health of students. And I know with ISD we're trying to address some of those problems, but I think that's, you know, we just had a whole room full of people looking at our LGBTQ policy or the installation of one, and I really look at our mental health, the mental health of students, and I don't really know what to do about it, because I think we have a lot of students who are affected by mental health, and their mental health may be affected because of other things. It may be LGBTQ, it may be poverty, it may be alcoholism, it could be drug use. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm just wondering where we're going to go eventually, DEC-wise, district-wise, in terms of mental health.
I know in speak.
Yes.
You could.
I know in speaking to some of my schools in the Oromocto Center, it is it's at the forefront. So you are certainly voicing what schools are voicing as concern. A positive in it all has been the addition of child and youth teams. And what I'm hearing from schools is that services are being provided more quickly. Once referrals are made, the wraparound is happening more quickly. So that's a positive. As far as where we're going to go, when you know, in the report we identify that, you know, schools are to implement and monitor a positive learning and working environment plan. I see mental fitness fitting into those plans. Schools need to identify what their needs are, and it's so vast. So I think it's certainly going to be an ongoing conversation, and it will take more than educators to answer the question. And so I'm hopeful with the child and youth teams, and I think Catherine would say that as well, that as they become more part of how we do business, we will be able to meet needs more quickly.
So what's the difference between the child and youth teams and the ISD?
ISD is the umbrella.
Right.
Child and youth are the actual teams that are in the buildings.
Okay.
So they fall under the ISD umbrella.
Okay.
Yes, Jim.
Easy, I'll be all right. I just want to agree with Heather 100% on that, and express my concern that out in the world beyond the doors of the school here, that I deal with lots of people school-wise, and I deal with lots of people mental health-wise, and these people are not getting the same gushy feeling of the wraparound success that you're reiterating here. And I think that I had asked Catherine in the past for some sort of a report from somebody to let us know how this ISD is working. It's just concerning that we went from child and youth teams in a building that dealt with families and child and youth, and we wrap them all up and lock their doors and move them into the schools where they have 2 days of meetings a week, and then they meet with some students. I'm not sure, and I don't know that they deal with families anymore. I think they just deal with the children in the schools.
So we still have our school-based ESS teams. So those teams are still in place.
Yeah,
and
I guess my concern is for the mental health of the children and the fact that, even looking at some of this data that you have here, low mental fitness at 14% and 13% in the province is very concerning. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of kids, mm-hmm. right? And speaking from perspective of a parent who has a child who has mental health issues that were never dealt with in the school system, it's very concerning to me that nothing has changed.
Okay, can I just I recognize Stacey Brown in the room. And Stacy's the guru on how we should be operating in a governance model. And I just want to call us back for a moment to think about, this is our first monitoring report that we should be looking at in the governance model. So we indicated to the superintendent, this is our healthy living policy, and we want you to report back. First of all, you need to tell us your interpretation of the policy and what we want from it. It's not us to judge whether that interpretation is right, but rather it's our position now to decide whether that was a reasonable interpretation of that policy as it is written. If it wasn't reasonable, then it's up to us to fix the policy, right? Or perhaps there was a problem with the superintendent's interpretation. Then we look at what the superintendent has provided as evidence that their interpretation of what we want has been met. And if we find that the interpretation is reasonable, and if we find that the proof that it has been met is proof enough for us, then we approve. You see there's a section on, I guess it would be page 4, it says, I report compliance with this policy. So that's our evaluation of what the superintendent has done with this policy. It's a jump for us to jump from saying, tell us how you're doing this, to no, it's not up to us to ask you to tell us how. We're asking you to say what you thought we wanted and the proof that you got there. So just, am I halfway there?
Yeah, you are. I don't know if you can expand or...
Sure, yeah.
The goal is to keep out of the operations and to make a clear delegation between operations and governance. And we saw in the, I don't know if everybody or if anybody saw the report out of Nova Scotia with the Raise the Bar that resulted in the recommendation to disband mm-hmm. school boards in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
One of the recommendations in there was that there was a lack of clarity between governance and operations. So recognizing that we often have that problem where we drift a little bit into operations, we've been kind of ahead of that with this project around the province of trying to get more into the governance piece of it. So it's trying to draw that line. And you're right, it is difficult when you're used to, yeah, well, let's talk about how we got there. If you have legitimate concerns with the outcomes, that would be the opportunity to say, I'm not sure that this evidence supports this finding of compliance. You know, tell me more about how you can justify this as meeting the outcome. That would be the opportunity to say, you know, we need more evidence, we need more information. But unless there's a compliance issue, you know, the operations and how is the superintendent, what outcomes is your responsibility? You set the standards and the outcomes that you want to see. The how is the superintendent, and then it's up to her to prove to you that she accomplished your goals by providing the evidence to support the statement. I'm happy to answer any questions on it. I know I do this all day every day, right? But I know that it's hard to get your head around for the first time. Maybe.
Now if it was the wish of the DAC that we do focus conversation with our communities on mental health in the communities, then we could structure communication with them and maybe have that affect our policies so that we're learning from our communities how mental health is important to them or how they feel the efforts are or are not meeting what they want. So those are the kinds of things that we can do with the time that we free up from talking to the district about how things are done. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Mark?
You got ahead of me because I was going to ask a few questions related to that, and that is just looking at this, I haven't had time, I'll confess, to go through it in our new format and new thinking. And I was wondering if now was the time we would ask questions related to that, or would it be better to maybe go back and just look at it and say, kind of, I guess I have some questions. It's a good, I like the format, I can see... I'll have to go back and check, but I'm wondering, there's another form that was in that manual that we could review this in relation to a checklist of is the interpretation, the evidence, etc. And I'm wondering if this would be good. I'm fine with leaving this as this, but maybe either A, going back, hauling out that form, comparing it, and maybe... You know, coming back again, I don't know if the next policy is going to be reported like this as well, then we can just keep going, because, you know, I guess I just have some questions, and I don't know if it's now we should ask or...
Sure. And an alternative is to combine the two so that the checklist is there on the side of the report.
Yeah.
So, and Catherine has offered to do that. She said it's not difficult to rearrange the report so that... And the good thing is that we evaluate the reports as they're done.
Yeah.
And so the end of the year, when it comes time
that's
for superintendent evaluation, it's all done. The data is you know, we have decided whether we've agreed that it's in compliance, it's above compliance, or it doesn't meet compliance.
Not to discourage you from asking questions. I think that discussion might go on in an information session about the process, not so much about this report.
Mm. Right.
Not tonight, you know.
Right.
Yeah, well, and that's just because I'm thinking that, and just, you know, if I may, if anyone else is interested, if you look at the policy and then you say, and you look specifically at the format and say, did she get it right? Not, are we doing it right, but is it right? Not in terms of interpretation, but in terms of, when we look at how it's supposed to be, it says compliance with the policy will be achieved when, and is this make sense to us?
Right.
You know, and because this is the future, and I think it's a lot more efficient when we get used to it. It's a lot more efficient.
Yeah, yeah. And the individual questions about the data and all of that, we should have thought about and asked about when we read the report when it was presented ahead of time for us, so that. So, yes, April working meeting.
Yeah, if we can have a little time just to debrief a little on it, because now that we've
changed the date of that to April the 12th. So if you're available.
Was it April the 12th?
Yes. It was the 5th.
I'm in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, you're not coming back from San Antonio. So I will just be a new expert, right?
That's right.
Like, I'm going to San Antonio the week before to learn all about governance, and I'll probably be so exhausted. No, I'll be a guru. I'll be telling you how it is.
There you go.
Yeah.
And just to be transparent, we are having conversations about what data do we need to support our policies.
Yeah.
So that is something that we continue to have, and we are I'm excited, I think Catherine is as well, about the shift to this is what we're expecting, are we reaching our target or not. So this is really what we're working towards.
Just as one example, the proof on one of these items was that there were no complaints.
Yes.
So the data was that there wasn't any.
We're going to change, we have some discussions. We're talking with the superintendents about this process as well. We've got a committee. The provincial council of deaf chairs has a subcommittee that's been working with Zoe Watson and Greg Ingersoll to go through this and to come up with a step-by-step guide for deaf members on monitoring policy, and a guide for superintendents and templates that, you know, some different options on templates and whatnot. But one of the things that we came up in our discussion at the Minister's Forum was changing from the terminology data to evidence. Because sometimes it isn't numbers, sometimes it's, sometimes it's that there were no complaints. Well, I guess that's data as well. Anyway, to give more flexibility in the types of information that can be used to provide proof that there is compliance. So we'll be looking at, you know, evidence as a broader terminology to allow for more options. Yeah.
So, if the working meeting, we'll have that on the agenda, and it is a process. But I'm happy to see that there weren't any huge complaints. Thank you. I shut you off. Any other questions? Andy is saying absolutely not.
Right. We're getting soft. We finished early so often.
Yeah, it's true. So I asked you to have a look at the council's self-evaluation policies and be prepared to come to the April working meeting with suggestions, questions, concerns? Is the policy committee at that point to look at those policies yet, or are we just going to look individually now at whether we think we're doing what we should be doing in terms of those as a council and as a chair? Or are you going to be ready by the April working meeting to say what we think those policies should be rewritten to look like?
So I guess I will defer to Mark because I took over the chair partway through the process. I thought we'd gotten through the CSRs and the end results policies, or were they not updated?
We started, Stacy did a lot of work on the CSRs, so I'm not sure if we'll be ready in April for those, because we do, I mean, the other ones are, in a way, are more important, I guess,
yeah.
So I'm not expecting, I don't know. Big word. Depends on what else.
So just make notes.
You've been working on
as you go through those policies,
yeah.
As you look at them, and just, you know, make notes and bring them to the April meeting, and we can see if there's anything that we can do to improve what we do, and maybe make suggestions if you think for the policy committee.
So were they not updated? We talked about those a couple of months ago about changes around CSR 1, CSR 2. Were they not updated in draft or in the policies online?
There was a couple updated. I would have to haul through my notes.
I know there was two that we deferred, 1.3 and 1.4.
Monitoring and the superintendent evaluation.
Yeah, the rest I thought we approved at a meeting with staff.
We did do
not the oh, the CSR ones?
Yeah, CSR
ones. Oh, yeah.
CSR.
No, but I not the GP ones, though. She's talking about GP.
Oh, sorry, I thought she said, no, she said CSR.
Are we talking about CSR?
Council self-evaluation.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry, I was thinking GP. I don't know why I was thinking. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we did. I think we did some of those already.
So that was done before I...
Yeah.
I step in. I don't know if they're updated online or not.
We'll check.
They're all November 2017.
We'll get together.
Okay.
They're all...
That one.
Okay.
That's CSR 6, I don't know. If
yeah.
Okay.
Is CSR 6 updated?
Doesn't matter. We'll...
Okay. Now that I'm on the
yeah.
page. I was thinking GP,
sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't have that.
Okay. Are you ready for school success stories? Now that the press is gone, but Judy will have something to report if anybody asks her for it.
Just for clarification, I got mixed up because it said CSR 1 through 6, Council Self-Evaluation.
Right, right.
So that's GP.
GP, right, sorry.
I'm not blaming anybody.
Okay.
I'm just confused.
Just me, probably. Do you hear? Jane is calling you. Andy.
What about that curricular programization?
That's the one I mentioned earlier. That tonight was going to be the report on assessment results for French immersion and individual school assessment results, and we're waiting for the superintendent. The
gotcha.
Other superintendent.
The real superintendent.
Well, not technically.
Not the acting.
Your
acting.
Sign says acting. Doesn't say acting. Interim acting. Yeah. Okay. And Andy, the reason Jane is calling your name is because she wants you to do your positive school story.
Thank you, Jane.
You're welcome.
Bath Community School has a success story reported. The McCain Foundation granted $8,000 in funding to purchase flexible seating, allowing the students to be upright while or in seats that accommodate kinesthetic learning needs. Stephen Hutchins, representing visual art, and Aaron Crane for instrumental and vocal, who are artists in residence, are working with grade 7-8 students to produce amazing products on display at the local gallery. High school teachers recognize tremendous skill not normally seen until grades above 12. That local gallery is the Andrew Lamore McCain Gallery, of course.
Good. Yeah. Nice. That's good. Thank you.
It's the last month of 4 months.
Seven Victoria High School. Engagement and attendance are increasing in Mrs. Barclay's English 12-3 class as the result of a career project which focused on exploring pathways and future plans. Several students applied and have been accepted in post-secondary programs. Many of them have increased their academic abilities and are on the road to graduation for June 2018. After struggling academically and with attendance, a transferred student now attends classes most days, receives First Nation interventions, including during noon hours, currently passing all five of his courses, sees value in school, has plans for graduation, and is willing to make the personal and educational effort to make this happen.
Thank you. That's nice. Faith. Nacogdoches Middle School, Win What I Need Intervention Block. Nacogdoches Middle School began a multi-grade, 30-minute daily intervention block 5 years ago, which placed students with similar needs and abilities together. Targeting the core subjects of math, literacy, and science, students rotate to the teacher, who modifies each week based on the needs of the group. Success is revealed in part by our summative assessment improvements. In the 2017 literacy results, we scored higher in appropriate by 1.4%, higher in high appropriate by 11.3%, while in strong, we have doubled the provincial average and nearly doubled the district. Our goal of building school community and having students participate and contribute in real-world citizenship opportunities has included the development of our after-school chef school, where students connect with outside agencies to support the program and are cooking and delivering their meals to seniors in the community through our Meals and Wheels program. Thank you.
Wow. Good idea. Yeah. What's next, Sean?
So at the Dash Box Hits Memorial, they had two school success stories put forth this month. The first being that staff and students are working hard to support the community through their fourth annual school-wide 100th Day Challenge, which is designed to help those less fortunate by donating at least 100 items per grade level to the Fredericton Food Bank. Each grade is assigned a food item, and each year they surpass their goal. Students at National Artist Memorial School develop pride in their efforts, and it deepens their level of empathy, generosity, and compassion for others. The second item they brought forward for recognition is the Try for Five, the school just got healthier. It's an initiative that's a school-wide challenge selected by their student wellness group to encourage staff and students to eat at least five servings of fruit or vegetables per day for the month of February. Try for Five motivates the entire school body to become ambassadors for healthy eating.
Montgomery Street Elementary School, Mayor Michael Bryan laced up his sneakers and headed to Montgomery Street School to participate in some wellness activities, which also involved students from Fredericton High. As health-promoting schools, Fredericton High and Montgomery Street reach out to each other and formed a relationship 3 years ago. The result is a physical literacy program planned, prepared, and led by the Fredericton High School Leadership Program, or class.
Good, thank you.
This is me. Okay, so I'm reading Keswick. So Keswick Valley has been working hard this year on strengthening practices and learning to foster the engagement of all learners with a focus on increasing student voice. As part of our whole school daily morning intervention, we include wellness intervention as well as academic interventions to incorporate students at all levels. We use data to support these interventions and in turn build relationships and connections, which not only build a sense of belonging among students, staff, and community, but also strengthen academics and in some cases prompt stronger attendance.
Carol Peterson. For the third year, 300 students were assigned a poppy, a name, and a task: to place the poppy on a headstone of a fallen soldier and pause to remember. Through the No Stone Left Alone program, students visited more than 200 headstones at the St. Vincent de Paul and St. John Anglican Church cemeteries.
And at Gibson Neal Memorial School, better known as the Gnome School,
only by Jane.
What?
Only by Jane.
Well, that's right, yeah. We are very excited to have raised the funds to build a new track at our school with a lot of community support. This project will go to tender this spring for summer construction and will be a welcome addition to the physical education instruction. The outdoor learning path was also completed in September. Many classes have enhanced their science, literacy, and math curriculum while spending time in the forest.
Thank you. And we were just saying there's evidence in those good, those success stories of some of the healthy living, whatever that policy was that we just did.
That was a long time ago.
A long time ago.
Healthy living, nutrition, and physical activity.
I like that some of our success stories are including success in academics and success in student populations that may not have always experience success, so that's good. And still, I don't see any pictures, but if you happen to be visiting a PSSC that has had a good success story and they have some pictures, then send them on in to Judy.
Awesome.
No report from the policy committee?
Oh, yeah. So just before our information session 2 weeks ago, I did get a chance to sit down with Stacy. We did work through all the EL policies, so I have a number of notes there. I haven't had a chance to go ahead and update the policies online, so my goal is to have that done for the next meeting.
March.
Very second, so I'll get those up beforehand so people can take a look. Get those. I'm hoping to get to the GPs as well, but I need to do a little bit more work. When I saw Stacy, I only had enough for time to get through the ELs, so I'm going to get those finished up. And then hopefully, there was two CSR reports, 1.3, which was around superintendent performance and accountability, and 1.4, monitoring district performance, which we had deferred until the minister's meeting in February. So if I get an update from Stacy between now and then, we'll hopefully bring those back as well. If not, they'll be deferred until we get that.
Probably deferred.
Yeah, I would say.
Close, we're getting close.
And we realize that the numbers are all mixed up, but it's because we're positive, we're working in a positive direction. So
transitioning.
Yes. Transition to processing
before it
better.
Gets better.
Like butterflies?
It gets messy before
it gets
better.
Ah, oh, remember that. Okay, public comments.
No?
Lady right here.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know what you're saying or stay seated.
Oh, no,
know.
Stand up, yeah. Stand up if you count it.
They have to be counted, okay. Madam Chair, if I may, I would like to just make a couple of comments and then have a question or two, if I may.
We might be able to answer your questions. It's not appropriate. It's not normal that we would do that, but
okay,
we'll see.
Okay. I was just reading by what the public procedure was there. So I wasn't planning to stay for your meeting, but I thought it was interesting, so I wanted to stick around just to see what you do. I may never sit on another one again. I don't know. So I just wanted to say that clearly the work you do does create change. And I hope for the better for our students and educators, so thank you for your work. And I know the work probably seems daunting at times, but I do hope you count this as a privilege and blessing to be able to serve students and educators in this position. So I hope you serve this position with joy and thankfulness. I was here to support the KCS group that was here. Before you roll your eyes, you know, I went back. That's okay. I just wanted to ask for clarification just on the discussion being tabled until October 2018. I just want to understand, as was mentioned, the report at that point, the sustainability report would be 2+ years old at that point. So I just want clarification on if a decision is just made without further talks or discussion with the school at that point about enrollment, about changes in the community
for population growth in that area. I think that's what I would like to know. Just as a school, I know we're fighting to get French immersion, which would change our enrollment. It might bring some students back from other schools, so I just wanted clarification on that as to whether a decision is just made based on a two-year-old study at that point, or if there will be any updates to, I guess, the numbers at that point.
So it could be made the same as a decision could have been made tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on the wishes of the people around this table. I will offer a little bit of encouragement that we are made aware of the data around registration numbers and things like that through the year. So, and that information is something that individual counselors should be aware of before they would enter into making a decision.
Okay.
But I can't promise that a decision wouldn't be made.
Right.
Because constitutionally, it could be.
Okay.
Constitutionally? What's the word?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's a pleasure to see the involvement and the interest from your community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm sorry I didn't get to read my letter of support, but apparently I'll be reading it in September.
And if I may just make one more comment.
Sure. Could you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm Julianne Moore. I live in Silverwood, just up the street from the school. So I have two children. One is at Garden Creek right now because we unfortunately don't have French immersion at KCS, and my daughter will be starting kindergarten in the fall. So I just want to just say, just as a mom, that, you know, you move to a small community for a small community school feel. So you're not just making a decision on a small community school, you are making a decision on a community. So I just want to leave that in your responsible and capable hands, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Nope.
No, I didn't tell Darren he couldn't talk.
Huh?
He said he
was. Oh,
I
just got nothing.
Oh, you got nothing.
I got nothing. Yeah.
You were in Twitter on Twitter today, or the Hanwell.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
I suppose I could comment briefly on it. So we're changing around our strategy a little bit. Of course, we're trying to incorporate our media presentations now to the province to be about. I focus on, I think it's policy 407, 406, I can't keep up off the top of my head, community schools. It's 407, right?
I don't
know.
409.
409.
409.
409.
No. Community use of schools?
No.
407 or 406?
407.
407.
Anyway, so we're trying to focus on that. We requested a meeting with, of course, the minister, ECD, who wasn't available, but suggested we would contact the deputy minister's assistant's cousin or something, I don't know, whatever it was. Way on the list, so we were going to put our report, so that didn't happen. So we're going to be changing our strategy again, and, you know, if you find magic money for a new school in Anglophone East, maybe they can find magic money for a school in Anglophone West, right?
Right.
That's all I got.
Thank you for your continued interest and support in your community.
Sorry I missed last month at a conflict.
We missed you.
The ultimate figure.
I have nothing left.
Literally.
Literally.
This is the, close the meeting. After the meeting's over, you can come and see the gift I got this week from
Motion
Seattle,
to
Washington.
Adjourn.
Thank you. Adjourn. Thank you very much.
You got a gift from Seattle.